So first of all, I would like to thank, of course, organizers David and Julie and Toby for inviting us with my student. We find this stay here very instructive, to say the least. So I will talk about work. It's a continuation of the work we did together with Gabriele Veneziano and his student Daniel Dorigoni from Pisa. And it is about these multi-part on Hoft equations, but they actually didn't. We didn't decide to study them for themselves. They just came out from the bigger scheme. So I would like to tell you how they come out and how they show up. And actually, the main part of the talk would be this. And this is just a short recapitulation. So, well, it's always, we know that lattice is fantastically successful, and there is no discussion about that, especially in this audience. But it's always good to have alternative, yes? One party system is never good. And so alternative way is to diagonalize Hamiltonian, and the way people try to do this for quite a number of years is to use the light cone. Now on the rather light front, they do it numerically. It goes under the name of light cone discretization, and there are many simplifications which are used. They don't have to be used, but they are used. For example, R10, planar diagrams only single traces. We do reduced models, which are of course easier. We then consider quantum mechanics at infinite n. And supersymmetry, which in fact is a simplification because theories are simpler. There are more predictions. There are maybe more difficult to study, but there are more predictions to check if what we are doing is correct. Now, in this context, studying this lattice, this light from Hamiltonian, there are these famous equations, which I don't hesitate to call QCD equations. They are just eigen equations for this Hamiltonian on the light cone, and they are very complicated. They are coupled beta Salvitre equations, coupled between different parton sectors. The main property of field theory, as you know, is production. We studied production in accelerators, and we also, of course, had it here. And this is what makes this beast very difficult to solve. So we decided, with Gabriele and Daniel, at some point, to put yet another simplifications on this. And we're starting at this equation and starting and try to find a way to see some hierarchy. What is most important, what is less. Perturbation is hopeless. We talk about bound states. And it turned out that there is one way to think about it, which puts everything in some sort of order, which is organizing things according to the degree of infrared divergence. And this we call Coulomb approximations. And in this Coulomb approximation, or infrared dominance approximation, in this Coulomb approximation, the Hoft equations come very naturally, as you will see. So we have numerical solutions, we found some intriguing properties, beautiful pictures, etc. And then, of course, we settled to try to see if this can be seen analytically. So short review of lattice approach. On the light cone, we have this infinite momentum, which is split into n partons. Parton momenta are strictly positive. When we discretize, we replace this momenta, the big one and the small one, by integer numbers, and there is still this relation, which actually cuts not only the discretization of the momentum, but it also cuts the Fock space, the Fock sector. Yes, we can have at most one unit of momentum per each parton, so if we decide to do something for long k, we cannot have more than k partons. So this cutoff is actually very, very useful. It does two things at once. So what do we do? We have this cutoff. We generate all partitions, roughly speaking, into all momenta, and then we have states. They are large n traces, single traces, and then we calculate matrix elements using large n, for example. Then it is easy. Relatively easy.
In this case, there will be a special lattice also, or only k lattice?
There will be also special. We are actually doing this also in the special, but mainly the main light cone is in the moment. So what are these equations? Let me just flash briefly through them. So as I said, they are eigen equations for the Hamiltonian, and this light cone Hamiltonian is really mass square operator up to the factor of p. And then when we think about decomposing full state of a proton, let's say, or whatever, into the Fock components, we have these wave functions, and these equations can be written picture like that. What Hamiltonian does, it is a polynomial let's say, a fourth order in the field, so it can scatter two partons, it can create two partons, it can annihilate two partons. So basically, this equation diagrammatically looks like this. And in short notation, it is just such a hierarchy of coupled equations where they are sort of sparse in the multiplicity, but well, we will see how they look like. This symbol means convolution integrals over all these x's of partons involved in these elementary processes. So let me go through three examples how they look like. This is the formal decomposition of the state. And let's take UCD in two dimensions with fundamental fermions. This is really the Hopf model. And then this equation, the hierarchy is scattered. Luckily, there are no more states in large M, no more than two body states. So this is the equation. There is contribution from mass, and there is this famous Hopf kernel with Coulomb singularity.
So this is to find bound states.
That's right. This is for the bound state, and this is exact. There is no infinite coupling, nothing. But then we know this is famous known from 74. But people then thought this is a little bit, it is nice and beautiful, but it doesn't give us the whole richness of the field theory. The richness is about this production. So we really would like to understand what's going on within these sectors. So the one way to do it is to go to adjoint fermions, for example, or in general to adjoint matter. And then we have all the couplings at our disposal. And this is what it looks, for example, for supersymmetric young Higgs in two dimensions. And then I have restricted this just by hand to the two-parton sector. So what happens? We have bound state, bosonic bound state, and fermionic bound state. The lowest bosonic components is just boson, boson, and fermion, fermion. And they are coupled equations. And then it goes on, of course, for higher partons. And then for the lowest fermionic state is just being total boson, fermion, fermion. And one thing which is worth of noting apart of all these factors are these Hopf kernels. They are always there, and they are in the diagonal part of these equations. They are in fermion, in boson-boson, in fermion-fermion, in here, everywhere we see them. So now, here is the Young-Mills 2, is adjoint fermionic matter. All parton sectors. So again, structure is similar. This is the mass contribution. Here is this diagonal Hopf exchange in the T-channel, let's say, singular Coulomb exchange. And then we have, we have fusion of two partons and we have emission of two partons. And then, of course, one has to sum over all permutations. So these are basically the equations, and you can easily see that they are pretty hopeless. Yes? There are many works during these 40 years, and actually there is not much of the progress. Even Stan Brodsky admits himself that these equations are really still challenging. One can get many useful phenomenological information from the Lightcon approach, but to get masses is really tough. All right, so what we did, as I said, we started from supersymmetric Young theory in four dimensions, then we reduced it to two, so we had QCD2 is adjoint matter. And then, as I mentioned, we realized that one may try to say, okay, let's first try to solve in the some zeroth order of approximation only this Coulomb piece. This Coulomb piece is the most infrared divergent. So let's first solve the most infrared divergent, and then imagine that there is a scheme that we can include the logarithmic divergences and then constant conflict. So this is what it is about. Then this approximation has a dramatic effect. There is no coupling between sectors anymore. The only coupling is through the radiation, even in the bound state problem. So now we are really diagonal in sectors, and this is, of course, much easier, but we have to do it for every sector. So we do it numerically. First, we started doing this numerically, so we get eigenvalues, and we get also eigenstates, and this is actually the Edward question. We also studied this in the X-space. It is funny, I haven't seen many studies of the Hopf equation in spite of these 40 years. How do these solutions look in the X-space? In the light column, this is X minus variables. And they are very simple and intuitive. And then one can see also confinement, for example, one can determine string tensions, etc., etc., and many other things. So what is this Coulomb approximation? What are these divergences? where these are basically already set. This is so you have Hamiltonian, which is a huge beast of whatever, 20-something tails, and then you look up only for this divergence, and here we have, this is the self-energy contribution. There are no masses, this comes from the supersymmetric, so no bare masses, and now there are these two radiative parts, which actually cancel, the sign is different. Lambda is prof lambda, so there is a factor of n hidden here in those traces, because you have some more indices. In the sum, when you calculate matrix elements, everything is leading toward the n. So this is the solution for two partons, the Hoft problem, let's say, back with the algebraic partons. So, well, we set up the states. States are labeled by two integers. It's really one integer because there is this relation that sum has to be equal to the large momentum. We have this matrix, we diagonalize it, and then we Fourier transform it to the relative distance. And this is how they look in the relative distance, would you imagine? They just correspond to partons sitting in this linear potential. It is very obvious, actually, but one thing to say it's obvious, and second is to see if the right system will be different. So this is the scan sweep through all the states. This will take something like 200, and we go from 1 to the highest one. So you see that partons are just moving, nothing more. And now, so there is this interesting localization property of these solutions in the light from variable. So now from this you can get a string tension immediately without any initial loop, without nothing, yes? Because we have the energies, and then from this we can easily read the distances. So this is how this spectrum looks, and it is of course linear, and the proper slope is 1/2 lambda. As it was derived actually by Kazakov long time ago formally from some mechanical linear equations, even. So here everything is nice and simple, and of course there is convergence with cutoff with k. We have to move to higher k. So this is nice and simple. Let's go to three partons. Now we have these states, they are labeled by two integer momenta. We do the same story. We Fourier transform. Now we have two relative distances. We can pick up any pair, but let's say we pick up this one. And now I will run you a movie. How do they look like? This is the lowest state, all three sitting at the same point. Then they depart little bit. They go through the boundary conditions, and they come back. This is the higher state where they sit separated at 120 degrees. This state is actually not very interesting. It is nice, maybe symmetric, but it's not, because this state hasn't converged yet. There is this tower of states, and states which are high, they don't converge. They never converge. So when we increase cutoff, the new states pop up. So we should look for these lower states. And they contain some physics. This is how these things look on the Dalitz plot. Previously, if you just looked at them on the plane, in two dimensions, you wouldn't see the symmetry. The interaction is symmetric. And so, but when you, and this you didn't see because it was plotted in not symmetric variables. Now, in symmetric variables, which is just, we just consider the sum of the three relative distances, and the sum has to be zero. So one chooses the massless Dalitz plot, basically, and this here you see. Nice, and they again are sitting in this potential and moving apart. And from this you also get a string tension. And here it is. Convergence is poorer, but it is still there, and you would have to go to higher case. Of course, your computer starts complaining. It's three, it's still not many, but number of states is growing, of course. And you can imagine that you continue this game for larger and larger multiplicity sectors. Now I flash only one with four. These are just, you cannot see much if you make such a plot. This is just in three relative distances, these are the contour surfaces of constant values. So you can imagine that these partons are sitting roughly where those balls are. But there are other ways to look at these multiparton states, for example, inclusive with distributions. And then they are very instructive, and we discuss them in that way. Okay, so let me now go to the real part of the talk and try to see if we can understand this analytically. So let's go back to that Hoft equation. Now I write it not in Feynman fractions, but in momenta. And this is this equation. This produces these solutions which I've shown in the first figure. Now, the way to solve this analytically, which goes all the way to Hoft, is actually to do something like WKB. I have first found it in Kutasov, but I say it is much earlier. What you do, you just actually replace this in terms of x or in terms of momenta, this finite bound, you replace them by pluses and minus infinity, saying that everything is dominated by this singularity. So for large eigenvalues, for example, it should be okay. And then, of course, these things can be solved, and solution is just a plane wave in momentum. And plane wave in momentum is, of course, delta functions. So those are the delta functions we have seen earlier. However, there is one still thing we have to think about. These plane solutions, these plane wave solutions, are good for any parameter delta. And energy, eigenenergy of these, is strictly given by the modulus, proportional to the modulus of the delta. And this is separation. Now, without boundary conditions, this is arbitrary. Now we have to impose boundary conditions, nevertheless. We've forgotten about these boundaries, but we would like to come back. And these boundary conditions, it's a question what one should choose. And it was shown by Neuberger in 204, by careful analysis, a la Hoft, by expansion around in the power behavior around these endpoints, that actually solutions for massless quarks, they should be normal solutions. And this is one piece where there is disagreement in the literature. For example, Kutasov did it later with wrong boundary conditions. So in any case, now if you impose this Neumann, this delta gets quantized. This is the usual story, and we get these famous solutions which Hoft even was using as the basis. And I think he was also arguing about them in the WKB-like way. So this is how good they are. This is our numerical eigenvector with dots, and these are these cosines. So you see that it's really perfect, almost perfect. Now we would like to do the same for many partons. So what is the strategy? Well, we just write the general solution of this asymptotic equation. By asymptotic, I mean that we neglect the boundaries. We send all boundaries to plus minus infinity, and we impose boundary conditions. But as I said, these boundary conditions were not known, so they have to be derived, and I will outline this little bit. And then after that, we have to identify this complete set of solutions, because there are over abundant. Then there is also Zn symmetry for rare partons. You would like to see this symmetry, etc., etc. So this is the n-parton Hoft equation. It's the kernel. There is this difference. And then there are these emissions. And singularities happen actually when these emissions are soft. Yes? So what is the phase space for n partons? The phase space condition is always this. Sum of this has to be positive. So in fact, we have only n minus one independent momenta. For Hoft problem, it was just one momentum. Yes? Now, the space boundaries are where each of these is zero. And this is just symmetric, so it is irrespective to this condition. Yeah? So if you write everything, for example, on a plane for three of these variables, it will be just axis, and then there would be this horizontal line which corresponds to the third one, being one minus the remainders. So now the boundary conditions. How actually we can understand this? This difference for mass which is higher, which is not zero, the condition should be Dirichlet. And for zero mass, the conditions turn out to be Neumann. And you can see it easily from this equation actually. Namely, what happens when x is zero? If the mass is non-zero, the strongest danger, let's say singularity at x equals zero and one, is just this. So f has to vanish. There is no other way. This thing is unable to generate such singularity. However, when mass is zero, this is not there. So what's happening? Well, there are problems with this principal value. Therefore, because usually this for any generic x in the middle of the interval, this pole in y is somehow is really active. The principal value prescription really works because we approach pole or we go through pole over both ends. So we have cancellation from left and right. But when x is at the edge, there is no such mechanism. Yes? There is only one half of a pole. The principal value wouldn't work. Therefore, the only way it can happen is that when this series, when the Taylor series around the edges starts from the second order, which means that the first derivative has to vanish. So this is really what sits behind this derivation of Neuberger, that boundary conditions have to be different for massless quarks.
Do you expect the limit of small mass to go smoothly to the...
That's right. Actually, when you look at these solutions, this is what is happening. They are really turning from this to something which is very, very flat in the end. And you can see it in this also, even in this numerical solution. So this is one story. This is story for one-dimensional top. Now, one has to generalize it for many partons. And the way to generalize it, this is the generalization. But the principle is the same. We have just looked carefully into this equation, and we looked where are all those infrared divergences coming from. So you see that sometimes it's coming from here, sometimes from there. Then when you have next one in this sum, you have this and this. So they are somehow interacting, and you have to include all of them. And this is finally what's the result. Basically, if you are in the generic middle, let's say in the parton number, this is like a Laplacian second derivative in the number. But however, when you approach the edges, there are some differences, and these differences are not only in these two. There is a third one, precisely because of this relation that n of them are dependent. And this was also derived independently by Zbyszek and Brozinski, these equations, these boundary conditions. All right, so now we are done. And as I said previously, these people use wrong boundary conditions. This is one little piece of understanding. So now what do we do? Well, we just go to our asymptotic equation when we just set up all limits to infinity. And again, this plane wave in the momentum space is a generic solution with arbitrary continuous position parameters, let's say. And then exact eigenvalue of this equation is again this string-like thing. Energy is just proportional to the combined sum of all things. And this combined sum goes everywhere. There are periodic boundary conditions here. So it goes to the last, and the last connects with the first. So now we enter the real problem. How do we construct how do we construct solutions which satisfy boundary conditions for arbitrary parton numbers? So let's go slowly. We have plenty of time. And let's start with three partons.
Can you think? Do you have any new kind of boundary condition? Do you have uniqueness?
I'm not sure about theorems.
This is the
physicist derivation. We are getting solutions which are consistent, and they form complete set, as far as we can say. But I didn't go through proofs. So, actually, it is a very good exercise. Now everything is light out. So three partons. Now there is new future for three parton solutions, and it will stay with us, of course. There is degeneracy. For every combined length of a string, there are many solutions. Well, you can imagine, yes, you can make the sum of n numbers or whatever n bits in many ways. And so the trick to satisfy these boundary conditions is we cannot satisfy them with one exponent, of course. But we have to use more trial functions with this more from this degenerate family. And it turns out that for n equal 3, it was enough to use this. So we start from this first solution, and then with this reshifted in case. So there are 1, 3, and 6 are this reshifted, and another is reversed. We go k1, k3, k2 backwards with minus sign. And this provides actually set which as a chance to solve these boundary conditions. But now let's look more carefully and just to prepare the drama, what happens with the drama, what happens with higher sectors. If you imagine that these the conditions were the following, that some partial derivatives, particular partial derivatives of this, have had to vanish at these boundaries. But if you have a boundary in multidimensional space, so it fixes only one variable, and then dependence on all other variables had to be the same. Yeah? So this is the sort of absolutely necessary condition that this may happen. And in this case, what's happening, you see, if you go to k1 equals 0, what happens, these two have the same dependence in k2, these two and these two. And if you go to another boundary, there are other pairs. Actually, what's happening, they cancel pairwise. And you need all six, really, to satisfy this.
Sorry, question. Yeah. I think of this as a bigot.
Yeah.
You have a triangle and then you reflect on them.
Yeah.
So that's the way you build all these functions.
Possibly, but you are too fast for me. Possibly. I can tell you one thing about the billiard. It's enough to consider only one plane, because all the rest is related with symmetry in that case. So if you satisfy conditions on one boundary, on one edge, you satisfy them everywhere. And that's as far as I can see. Maybe we can discuss this later. So anyway, so these are the solutions in terms of the independent two variables, let's say, and then the parameters, which are free at the moment, are all those relative distances. Now, as I said, necessary condition is that there must be the same dependence. Well, for this case, it's not so hard, but imagine that there are many of these partons, and imagine what would be the complexity, yes? So now what we find that indeed, this simple sum of these six functions, these trial functions, which I call singlet, because this is Z3 singlet, is satisfying this. You can just check, you can do your calculations, derivatives, and it is satisfying these boundary conditions. And then it satisfies provided these distances are quantized. I write them in such a funny way, and this is even, but then we have another some family where these are also. So this is sort of natural. Now, so this is solution which is singlet under cyclic, under Z3. What about two others? Actually, one can construct them as well. And the standard way, let's say, if you forget about this piece for a moment, if you want to construct something with eigenvalue lambda, you just multiply this by lambda and lambda and lambda squared, and then you pick up one lambda when you do the cyclic translation. And then in here, actually, there are no such factors. Why? Because there are these factors here. And they take role of those lambdas. So actually there is additional condition and relation, namely that if lambda, if these deltas are quantized now like that, that they are related with this eigenvalue of the Z3, then everything clicks and we have two additional solutions which are transforming under Z3, as they should. And this is just generalization of the condition which we had previously for Hoff. For this we have symmetric and anti-symmetric, and here we have these three possibilities. So this is actually a nice play, interplay between the space and sort of external symmetry. Yeah, they are entering together. They are mixed, intervened together. Now there is another question. All those pairs, they generate over complete set. It's just too much. Too many of them, and then you have to pull, look at it, check it, and so on, and here you find that actually it is sufficient. The set, the complete set is given by such pair and this two, with these limitations, and then there is this degeneracy, and then for new equal, for this covariance, these three covariance solutions, we have somewhat different, there is a little bit different expression for a distance, etc., etc. But everything is nice and clean, and P equals 3, three-parton problem is solved entirely. Now let's compare with numerics, which is also fun. So profiles of these states agree very well. It's very similar to this first plot of these cosines which I showed you. Here I have the numbers, I don't plot the profiles because I just give overlaps. But profiles also work, believe me. So this is the numerical number of my numerical solutions. And this is just parameterization in terms of those four elements of this analytical, and this is the profile. Now, when I have two, this means that there are numerically we have two solutions which are exactly degenerate, but they were these two solutions, mixtures of these two solutions with nu plus minus 1/3. So from this one has to make one and compare with plus and etc. So all this works nicely. These are the distances, but energies don't agree. See, here discrepancy is huge, it's factor of two. Here it goes slowly down, it's something like 30%. So it indicates into this WKD business that actually these solutions are solutions they will get better and better with higher eigenvalues. But at the moment, this is how they look like. Now, how does it look for higher states? See, this is the numerical spectrum, and this spectrum is just a mess. If I plotted it without anything, without any guide, it would be just absolutely undecipherable mess. But now here I compare it with these theoretical levels, which are evenly spaced, because they are just proportional to integer length. This is everything in these lattice units, let's say, 2 pi over t. And what's happening, here are these theoretical solutions with this degeneracy, and this corresponds to this. When I say correspond, it means that there is a big overlap. This actually is degenerate three times, and it has big overlap with these three, and it saturates this overlap. Again, with here, this has five, this corresponds to these five levels, and so on. So we see in the spectrum, in this massive spectrum, we actually see these discrete levels. And it is also very nice. It brings some sort of order. Yes? But there is again this factor, which I just adjusted this at will at the moment to see. I had these overlaps which were sort of objective, and they were telling me who corresponds to who, but the energy was not didn't agree, and this is again this difference by 30%. So we expect that this factor should go down if we go to higher states. Does it really do this? How can we look for higher eigenvalues? You know how it is. When you plot it, it's just mess and nothing you can see. But there is a way. Of course, you do entropy, or better, directly number of states. So let us define the energy distribuant, which is number of states below energy E, as the function of K. This is for our simulations. These are these dots. This is plotted as the function of 1 over K. So this is our continuum limit, infinite momentum limit. And these are energies, small and then higher and higher, etc. So now we see that they behave very regularly, actually, towards k going to infinity, and we can extrapolate. And then we ask, are these densities, not densities, these distribuants, are they equal to this analytical distribuant, which we can count? We can just count directly. So we are imposing this condition, but what about this level, this semi-level, let's say, yes? There was ambiguity of this factor, so I have put this factor rho, and the question is actually turned slightly, for which rho we have this agreement, and how this rho depends on the energy, yes? And this is what it does. See, this is this rho of 1, of 30% different from 1, and then we go to higher and higher energies. These are really high energies for a standard of these calculations. The states are just absolutely mess, undecipherable mess, and you see that it goes to 1. Actually, here it does a little bit too much. You see that it would actually go below 1, but the reason is that when we are at higher states, we cannot really... We just need more simulations, yes, because this extrapolation, we have too few points, really, so this shifts a little bit, and one really has to allow for such uncertainty.
So maybe extrapolation k?
Just notice that this is a symmetric function with a plus k squared or whatever. 1 over k squared.
A stupid question. The Toft coupling is fixed, or it runs and you get...
Toft coupling is fixed.
Actually,
everything is in units of Toft coupling. There is only one scale here. Okay. So this is everything is in units of Toft coupling. And so it is. Okay, now we go to four. I promise you we won't go one by one higher, but let's go to four, because there are new things happening at four. So now the trial states are direct generalizations of these sums, which we had previously. Now we had six, so now we have eight of them. Then they are now characterized by these triple independent integers. These are these relative distances. And then, so they are in these units of 2 pi over p. But surprise, they do not satisfy the boundary condition. Previously, those trials were satisfying boundary conditions. Like that. Now they are not. And this will go on for higher sectors. So there is a complication.
So 4 can be split into two pairs. The 3 pair will not, right?
Yeah.
So 4 can find, 3 can find, but 4 can be split into.
No, everything is under 1. Energy of everything, the solution, all these solutions are eigen solutions to the energy which is proportional to the length of the combined string.
Right, so it can split into two strings, no?
Well, no, because you have this I plus A plus J. How do you do this?
It's a single trace.
This has to be, this is planar, this has to be one trace.
Don't worry about the sublinking in
there. No, yeah, that's right. Okay, so now what turns out, however, we still have this huge degeneracy at our disposal. We don't have to use these particular eight functions, which we sort of guess because of the symmetry. Yes? We had Z3 and inverted Z3, let's say, or Z4 and inverted Z4. Z4 on the inverted configuration. There are others, yes? So it turns out actually that simple combinations do satisfy, and one can find them. And now procedure becomes a little bit computer dependent. We define the search and we know what it does, and then it gives us the answer. Hopefully we know what it does, and then it gives us the answer. So I will describe this to you. So first of all, we generate all these triples, these three relative distances, which mean the labels of the wave functions, which satisfy this condition for a given n, for a given l. And then we identify this linearly independent subset. This is done by the Gram matrix. Is no better idea at the moment. And now the trick is the following. You just think about this boundary conditions, this solves this whole problem of this dependence of another variables, many multitude of many other variables. You look at these boundaries, say boundary conditions, as the statement of linear dependence. Yes? Sum of some functions or derivatives have to be zero. Which means then on those subspaces, on those hyperplanes, let's say, some functions have to be linearly dependent. So you just look for these linearly dependent functions. And how do you do this? You just use Wronskians. So using Wronskians tell you if function is linearly dependent or not. So this singles for out these combinations which satisfy boundary conditions. Okay? So this is that step. The procedure is just giving us those linear combinations with coefficients. And then we have to organize them somehow. And then we are checking the completeness. So what is the result? Indeed, first of all, first success, let's say in quotes, there is such a series of simple linear combinations which satisfy the boundary conditions. Finally, the combinations which appear are one, which I call singles, two doubles and triples of these basis functions. By basis functions, I mean this big something. Yeah? No other combination. The coefficients, okay. Now, each independent trial functions appears only once in one of them, and all of them are used. This somehow came as the bonus. We don't really understand it yet. There are many things which are coming out, and we just treat them and use them later on as sort of guesses, but they wait to be proven, of course. But there are many nice similarities. Now, the relative combinations of these are very simple. There are all ones in triples, and one and two in doubles. There's nothing more. And it turns out that this we can understand. I will show you soon. And then these final combinations are orthogonal, even though the original, these triples were not these triads were not orthogonal. So this indicates that there is some nice Hermitian operation. Okay, so this is a map of such solutions for n equals 13. So this is plotted on the plane. Every point is one of our trial functions, and the complete solution is obtained by inverting in these three axes, in these three lines. This one. So for example, this has to be taken with this and with this. And in this way we form the triples. Now it so happens, these lines are the contour lines of basically of this condition, which is the same condition that sum of the all four distances is equal to the total length, but I have just eliminated one, and I did it as the parametric plot for this one, because it's simpler to see it on the plane. So now you see that when these lines, these inversion centers, when the points coincide with these lines, actually such points enter twice. And this explains this coefficient which we had earlier. So the generic answer is that there are always triples, but sometimes those triples are degenerate. For some n's, this plot actually evolves with n. There are more and more states built here. For some n's, these endpoints actually coincide with one of these points. This happens with one of the solutions. This happens for every third n. And then we have a thing, the sum of the three reflections is the same. So these were our things found by Wronski. And then from this you can figure out actually the labeling scheme and prescription and everything. Here is to show you the profiles. See, now they are pretty non-trivial. They agree. There is nothing more. These are the contour plots. Everything is all right. Here is again the completeness check, as I said, as we did for three partons. Yes, again. So this is the scale factor, which was adjusted such that the numerical and analytical distributions were equal, as a function of energy. And it starts roughly at this, it starts higher because energies are lower, but it goes around this 1.3 in the region which were on previous plots, and it goes down. Everything happens slower. We have lower energies at our disposal. It's a little more complicated, of course, numerically, but it seems to work. So this is end of the story for p equal 4. Now, what about arbitrary number of partons? Well, now we have only guesses, let's say, but guesses are supported by this simulation. So we did this exercise for p equal 5, and it's very similar. We had trials, basis, we had independent solutions. Wronskians were giving us all these combinations. The only new thing was that these combinations were now bigger. We had 4 plates, 6 plates, and 12 plates, etc. So you imagine that they will be bigger and bigger, but they are well defined again. And then, what happens, one can figure out a simple set of rules, which were checked, actually, they were working on here. On all these cases, they can be proven in p equal 4 and 3. They are obvious in p equal 3. They can be proven from our labeling from p equal 4. So we assume that they are correct. But of course, well, we use them. We have nothing better to do, yes? So the rule one is how to generate the basis. We generate all closed loops made of p bits with size b, this means that all bits are inside. Yes, we decide that the two of them are external, and we generate all of them in between. And then we pick up energy L. So for every size, there are different energies. Yes, if I have things, I don't know if this is. If I have bits which are separated at distance d, so the minimal energy which this has to be 2d, but the maximal energy is when in every jump they are separated maximally. Yes? So let's say half of them is here and half of them is here, and then those strings go like that. So this is basically the bound. So we have to sum over all of this. And then we mod out this ZP and IZP, this inverse symmetries also. And that's it. This gives us the functions which are linearly independent. So this is actually very close, sort of, to the way you can think about the things. I find it quite interesting. Now, rule two, how to construct combinations satisfying boundary conditions. This is extremely simple, which shows actually that there must be hidden simplicity behind all of that. And we are looking forward for somebody to show us the simplicity. we just solutions with the same values of those D's. They form this combination. So this is the example. 1, 2, this is for 4 partons. Now I have put all of them, I mean all four distances which are dependent. They are relative distances from next to another, so their sum is zero. And then the rule is that whenever I have such a 4 and I have different 4 with the same values but put at different positions, they really enter this combination. I don't have to use all of them because I have to mod out the symmetries. Yes? So this is how it basically is. And it is so simple that I'm sure that after staring at these formulas one can figure it out. And it, as I said, was checked to work also for p equal 5. You were able to do this numerical analysis also, and everything agrees. Everything is consistent. Okay, so that is basically the end. Uh-huh. And now, so let's try. This story has 2 days. It's 2 days old, so it has to be taken with the grain of salt, of course. But let's try now to be bold and count the states. So this is the logarithm of the number of states when I sum all these over all these sectors up to p equal to 6. And the first thing which I was, don't look at this straight line, this continuous line, look at this. I was really happy to see this curvature which looks like a square root, yes? And this is this famous square root from the Ramanujan formula which sits in the exponent for the number of partitions. And this is actually the core of the how do you derive it in string theory, yeah? So from this simple numerics up to p equals 6, you see it also. You see it for low p. But I think Ramanujan has this nice property that it's very good for also for low n. Anyway, so once you see that, you say, aha. Well, and this actually means that this is exponents of the square root of this variable, because this is this dimensionless variable, length, which translates into m squared over lambda. So if this is square root, then this is just this low exponential growth of states with some coefficient, and this is this coefficient. And I didn't know what to compare with, actually. I'm looking forward to discuss with people here what is the range of predictions for this type of theories. I compared it with the simulation of Bano et al. And it was I think 1995. And they got, they simulate, of course, ours is very crude. It contains only these diagonal contributions. Yes? And this is the full simulation of the two-dimensional Young-Mills with adjoint fermions, with adjoint matter. No supersymmetry, just adjoint matter. And they got this number. I think their simulations also could be questioned, one could discuss it, so on. So the range of these temperatures is not so, they are not very well defined, but in a way, what we get is this. So, of course, one should wait and one should check it better and try to get it to higher p's. Maybe some more analytical work is available, but everything looks promising, yes? So what is the short summary? Well, we need really to understand, to make more connection with this string counting, especially how to identify these linearly independent combinations and how to eigenstates and how to combine this and how to identify this combination in satisfied boundary conditions. Maybe one could understand it better. Then of course there is a question of interpretation of this TH. As Mike yesterday immediately noticed when we discussed it first time, he said, well, this is the confining, yes? Everybody is sitting in this one trace and the potential is linear, so how come? There is any transition. But on the other hand, there are ideas about screening, for example. Yes, you can have screening. There are people in large N theories. There are people like Armoni and Schickman, and so school about that. They expect that things which are some similar things like are happening like in the Schwinger model, in this planar theory. So this is not excluded, but certainly one would like to understand it better. Finally, from the point of view of our original goal, see, once we solve this problem in diagonal blocks and we have the complete basis, we already have green functions. And once we have green functions, we can solve this hierarchy by, well, we have now the block equations. Yes, there are nearest neighbor, and this is just a system of equations, and each of these is a block. And by Gauss elimination, we can actually, if we have inverses, we could actually reduce it to one self-consistent equation, which would determine for us solutions for the lowest sector. And then by shared integration, by pure integration, we can generate S. And what are these inverse blocks? Well, are just Green functions, and we have them. They are just sum of these delta functions. So, who knows? We are looking forward to play with it a little more. Finally, of course, this is the eternal quest. Don't think about reductions. Just try to think about original problem. Original problem in 3 plus 1 has also such equations. Stan Brodsky was fighting with these equations in one way or another. And one just has to add the transverse integration. And then, of course, everything is more complex. The light cone doesn't work so well. There are too many of these degrees of freedom. But the most difficult problem conceptually is renormalization. Because then you enter this just d2 kt over kt squared integrals, and they are just ultraviolet divergence. And the theory of renormalizations of the light cone is not understood. We talk to some experts, and it's understood. It's not understood beyond one loop.
And also, confinement is no longer perturbative. It doesn't follow.
Yeah, well, maybe this is not the confinement, what they see. Maybe it's not. Anyway, so there are plenty of problems, but this reminds, I keep in mind one paper by Wilson and Gwazek, where they were, of course, aware of that. And they have cooked up a model for a bound state, which sort of had these equations of this type, but was, of course, much simpler. It was a toy model, and it had need for a normalization. And they were able to actually generate nice spectrum going through all these blocking procedures. So who knows, maybe one should revisit this. And anyway, it's worth looking. So that is all. I'd like to thank you. Now, I have this, since I'm partly supported by this grant, and they require that we do so-called promotions, so I'm obliged to tell you about this. So please bear with me for 1 minute, but it's about 1 million euro, so maybe it's interesting. So this is the grant which we got in Poland, in Krakow, for the international PhD studies. And we gave it a fancy name, not fancy, but universal name, Physics of Complex Systems. So there are people who do gravity there, there are people who do QCD, there are people who do quantum optics, solid state, etc. So we got this 1 million euro for 4 years. We have 14 PhD students. One of them is here, for example. The money is spent for their salaries, and they are required to go from half to 2 years abroad during the studies. Studies last 4 years. And then, therefore, we had to have foreign partners, and we have plenty of colleagues with whom we collaborate on that. These are a few of them. And there are all 8 of us. So this is the end of the promotion. So if we come with the next round, I will inform you kindly, and you are welcome to join. Okay. Since I have not exhausted 2 hours, but I don't have more transparencies, but there is a nice tradition to talk about things which you find interesting, I would like to show you one slide. Yes, absolutely.
I'm somehow, what is it? So you have this interesting boundary condition that the wave function derivative is zero. A combination of wave functions, some components is equal to zero. The physical meaning of this condition is not clear.
Well, this is just, they come from the requirement of the cancellation of invariant divergences.
It is a zero momentum. So it is in coordinate space, it is that something
you are exchanging
neutral and total charge is zero or something like this. No?
Well, this is infrared. Okay, yes. Yeah, but see, these are in terms of the perturbative calculations, these are these infrared divergences. And you require them to cancel, of course, yes. And this is requirements for cancellation of these divergences in these bound state equations. And that's all.
but it's not wave function goes to zero at some boundary. It is derivative of wave function of combination of wave function.
Precisely because there are those differences. And differences always cancel. What has to cancel also the first term. First derivative. This is what comes out from this analysis. I'm not sure if I can give you more intuition about that, but the physical requirement is one and the same all the time. I tell you.
So psi times derivative of psi, which is like flow, vanishes on the boundary. There's no flow probability outside of the regions.
These are these equations. Yes? So when you actually integrate, then you see this comes when the k is equal to p1. In this case.
Right. So in the boundary you say they cannot cancel, and therefore each of them could go to zero.
And the point is that there is interplay. This is, if you do it in the trace, in the large chain way, like way, what happens if you have these diagrams? This is the one big trace of your creation operators. And then emission to the left and emission to the right, they have to cancel between neighbors. And when you analyze this is exactly this conversion.
On the boundary, there is no flow anywhere. So there's somehow flow probability stops.
Yeah.
But who cancels whom? Is you only can find after analysis.
Well, you can find it. No, you can find it carefully and not find it here in front of you, but we can go later on.
Okay.
Quiet of our office, and we can see who finds who from in this diagram.
It means that there are emission in the middle, in the box, so to say, in the boundary, there are no more emission.
You have n partons, and you just emit between this and that, this and that, this and that. And you have to organize them such this and this, of this and this, of this and this. So this one has to cancel both of from this one. This one has to cancel both of from this one, and so on.
Okay.
All right, so let me show you something else, I know that in this place, this subject is pretty popular, and I was fascinated at some point in this. And the reason I'm saying this is that there is a tiny development, new development. So what it is, this is the solution spectrum. Again, diagonalizing our glad Hamiltonian, not iPhone, but this is Hamiltonian which comes from this dimensional reduction of the supersymmetric theory in 9+1. The famous mother theory of everything, yes. And this is the simpler problem. This is problem of 3+1 dimensions. So we just reduce 3+1 dimensional theory, supersymmetric theory, to only one line, which is psi. And we have the Hamiltonian. And we have diagonalized this Hamiltonian numerical. The way to do it is actually very, very, very straightforward. You just write everything in. You remember these potentials have the kinetic terms, 1/2 p squared, and then they have these potentials, famous potentials with the flat values. And then these potentials are actually cause of the main excitement and interest for all this time. So the way we solve it with numerically diagonalize this, we just replace all these by harmonic oscillators. Just express everything by equation and annihilation operators. This system, for example, has what? It has, this is a SU2, so this has two Majorana fermions and three colors, so this is 6 fermions in degrees of freedom, and it has 9. It has 3 transverse bosonic times 3, which is 9. It has 3 gauge conditions, so this is 6 and 6. So basically, this is a system of 6+9, 15 variables. So imagine that we are diagonalizing Hamiltonian of 15 variables. Our Velaf theory would have 51. If 9+1 Hamiltonian would have SU2 would have 51 variables. It will have. So now this Hamiltonian conserves fermionic sectors. There are 6 sectors, so for each F we can diagonalize it independently. For the bigger story, there would be 24 such sectors.
What do you do with the flat bounds?
We just don't care, they just come out. They are.
I mean, doesn't that mean everything's unstable?
They show up. That is what I'm going to discuss. Just a moment. That's what I. These are these colors. These colors are about flat values.
So F is a fermionic number.
So F is fermionic number. J is angular momentum. We are in three dimensions. We have angular momentum, which is integer for bosons and half integer for fermions. So we have and J is also a constant, of course. So each channel is labeled by F and J. So this is the vertical line of this plot. And these dots are just eigenstates. Numerical diagonalized eigenstates. Now, what are the flat valleys doing? Flat valleys are actually filling some of these sectors with continuum. So this means this is this yellow. I should have plotted the whole, this, for example, these middle sectors, I should have painted them with yellow. There is a continuum going all the way to zero. But this,
what do they call it?
Sorry? Well, color means nothing. No, but this, but slowly. This gets really interesting. These wings are supersymmetric multiplets. If you just do your supersymmetric transformations, you do your exercise, you count your, you count your states, you just move your supersymmetry is moving you around this super multiplet. So these are bound states, which are degenerate. They are just supersymmetric degeneracy. There is additional degeneracy, which is called particle hole. There is difference between 0 and 6. This is the completely filled space sector, and this is completely empty as far as fermion numbers. So there is eigenenergies in 0 and 6 are the same, 5 and 1 are the same, 2 and 4, and so on, and 3 is self. And then, as I said, continuum, cancellation of transverse fluctuations in supersymmetric theory requires that there is a continuum, and this continuum happens to be not in every moment in fermionic sector, but only in sectors with F equal 2, 3, and 4. These sectors are purely discrete, and these are purely discrete. And this goes somehow with the idea that we need fermionic degrees of freedom to cancel, yes? So the maximally rich fermionic channels are these. And this, I think, was a novel thing in these simulations. It was not known precisely in which sectors we have continuum, in which we don't. And now, in these sectors with the continuum, there are also bound states. And these bound states, they are the same. They have the supersymmetric structure, but they are labeled by red because they are somehow immersed in the continuum. So they are sitting like raisins in a cake. In the continuum, there is a discrete state.
Yellow,
precisely, that is what I was saying. I wanted.
I should call it.
That's right. All right. So this is the structure for F, for D equal 3 plus 1, capital D. Now we also attempted. I attempted to go to this 51 degrees of freedom problem, and then it turned out to be too difficult for this approach. But there was one thing which I wanted to tell you, which was managed, I think it was around 2005. There is, you see, the whole story for this Fox space approach starts from the vacuum. No matter what you have to have this root state from which you act on it with your creation, fermionic and bosonic and whatever, and to generate all these bases and diagonalize. So now I have asked the question how this vacuum looks like in this nine-dimensional story setup. And then very strange thing came out, namely that this vacuum is not eigenstate of the nine-dimensional angular momentum. The nine-dimensional angular momentum is equal, if I remember correctly, holy number 78 and that. And that you start to think, oh my God, what it means. But it is true. This is actually true. These are the properties of the rotational groups. They change from every 4 or every 8, I think, and this is property of the fermionic generators. What happens, we have 8 fermionic generators. Sorry, fermions are 16-dimensional, but they are Majorana vial, so we have only 8. We have 8 creation operators and 8 annihilation operators of 8 species, of 8 Majorana vial species. And now, if we try to generate, for example, a fundamental representation which has dimension 16, actually, then we don't manage. We cannot do anything from the vacuum. The way, and so then I set up the more modest project, how to determine this state, which is actually eigenstate of momentum zero. And this eigenstate is there, and this state has fermionic number equal to 12. It is exactly sitting in the middle. It is the most complex state as far as fermionic occupation is concerned. And then when you act on that state, so this is our vacuum. And I have a formula sitting in that computer, which is huge, totally unreadable. It contains 1,300 traces acting on that vacuum. Yes, precisely. Here you have both of them and you can play. So now the question was, well, okay, can we use this and so on? Of course, we cannot do anything. We should really do our construction which led to this solution. We should start from this beast. Yes, but before doing this, one should understand better that state. And this is the development which I wanted to tell you about. This is by my student. Undergraduate student actually, Mariusz Hynek, who is now with Jens Hoppe in KTH in Stockholm. He is doing his PhD studies there. And what they did, they defined similar problem, but not the same. They started to look for this solution for this famous threshold bound state in the Taylor expansion around zero. So they said, okay, it's too complicated, let's turn the Schrödinger equation into equation for this coefficient, and let's determine the lowest state. And the lowest state turned out to be unique. Actually, my state is also unique. My state, call it, I don't know, such zero. This is all, there was only one from this huge diagonalization of this angular momentum in this sector, they came one unique state. And their state is only one state, the same state. Well, it's one state. So of course, both of them are singlets with respect to color and rotation, as soon as rotation. So there is immediate suspicion that it is the same state. And actually, the way they did it, what I was doing, I was actually building this from SU2 singlets. I was, these fermionic operators have color index, and they have Majorana index. So I was building SU2 singlets, and then I was finding SO9 singlet by numerical, by mathematical diagonalizations. What they did differently. They constructed sort of bricks, building blocks from SO9 singlets, and they diagonalized the SU2 problem. And they found that state, and actually, it looked different, totally different number of state, also huge beast and so on. But finally, Mr. Hynek, he found a transformation between the two fermionic representations, which shows that this is exactly the same state. So everything clicks together. I'm not saying that we can go on and now solve that problem in this way still, but this gives us a chance to understand structure of that state better. So in terms of these SO9 singlets, this state may be simpler actually. For example, one advantage of this approach is that now all these 1,300, we have identified all these 1,300 numbers, and which, while I have these 1,300 numbers as integers, they have these 13 numbers as nice rational numbers and square roots and so on. So anyway, there is a small light in the tunnel that we may actually understand better structure of this state. And of course, it's not only about understanding 1,300 numbers, but it's about understanding maybe there exists some transformation which makes this singlet really this state really simple. But this transformation needs a property, like Bogolubov transformation, yeah? It needs a property that it should also leave Hamiltonian boundary. We can of course define creation, one big creation operator of that, which annihilation operator, but then what, how the Hamiltonian looks like, yes? VMS. So the question is to find the balance, and for this one has to go through this exercise, and hopefully something could clean out. So I advise you, who is interested, you can certainly talk here, and I advise you to look at this guy. He's really smart. Thank you. This is the end.
Multiplet you found.
Where?
Somewhere among these there are some many germs and effects.
No, well, we find only these.
So
we find only these. The supermultiplet is just today 2J, 2J plus 2, 2J, 2, and 2J plus 1, twice.
Well,
we didn't go higher. Of course, this is the typical question you can put to the computer. What if n is bigger than 1? But I, why should they do something like that? This seems to satisfy completely. We have also calculated with an index with this, and with an index is of course zero, but with this regularization there is a contribution, there is a fractional contribution. Everything looks, there were no surprises. Now there is question, very nice question, if these states have a chance somehow to decay, mixing with this, what this mixing really does and so on, but that's another story.